This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Green goes back deep for Washington. Barnhart punting against the wind out of his own end zone. Good kick. Chases Green back to his own 48-yard line, but he's got some room. Darryl Green. Good go. Could be all over. It is all over.
Darryl Green had a lot of memorable moments during his incredible 20-year career in Washington, but that punt return in Chicago back in January of 1988 is number one. A great corner, the greatest corner in the history of the franchise. I think you could argue the greatest defensive player in the history of the franchise. His number one most memorable play was that punt return in Chicago. Good morning, Football Friday, week 7 of the NFL season already. Washington and Carolina Sunday in Landover, where Darryl Green's number 28 will be retired. A deserving honor, of course. I do think that Darryl Green is the greatest defensive player in franchise history. He's certainly the greatest cornerback in franchise history. 20 incredible seasons, all in Washington, 7 Pro Bowls, 4 first-team All-Pro honors during his career. During his first 10 years, the team was excellent. He played on 3 NFC title teams, 2 Super Bowl winning teams. Darryl Green played in 18 career playoff games. He missed one in 92 in Minnesota, but that was it. His teams played in 19 playoff games. He played in 18. Yeah, that's when the franchise was rather special. The fastest man in the NFL, probably for all 20 of his years. I mean, he was 42 when he finally hung it up. He was probably still in that, you know, year, if not the fastest guy in the NFL, one of the 2 or 3 fastest in the NFL. Just an incredible player and clearly one of the franchise's all-time best and fan favorites as well. The Mount Rushmore of players in franchise history includes Darryl Green. I think the other three would be Sammy Baugh, Sonny Jurgensen, and Riggo. I think that's the Mount Rushmore franchise-wise of players, you know, not counting coaches. Sammy Baugh, Sonny, Riggo, and Darryl Green. That punt return in Chicago, though, wow, what a memory for those of us that remember it. Denton does not. He's here with me. He was not even born yet. That game was played in absolute frigid weather. That was the 87 regular season. They played 15 regular season games because of, remember, the strike and the replacement players. They went to Chicago. They were an underdog in that game at Soldier Field. They were about a 4.5, 5-point underdog against the Bears. They had already beaten the Bears the previous year in the postseason. They had had a history playing Chicago in the postseason. They had lost a game at RFK in the 84 season, won at Soldier Field 27-13 after the 86 season. And then in 87, they went to Chicago In 4-degree weather. Yeah, the kickoff game time temperature was 4 degrees. The wind chill made it minus 20. And Washington won the game 21-17. It was Darryl Green's punt return that gave them the lead that they would not relinquish. The punt return actually came in the third quarter. I know a lot of people, in remembering that game, say, remember Darryl Green's punt return at the end of the game in Chicago? It actually came in the third quarter. It was 14-14. He returned that punt. Everybody remembers him grabbing his rib because on a cutback, he hurt himself. Ended up playing the next week because he made a huge play in that game too, on Darren Nelson at the end of the NFC Championship game. But congrats to Darryl Green, his jersey getting retired here on Alumni Weekend. They used to call this, remember when they called it Homecoming Weekend? In fact, the first year of this Homecoming / Alumni Weekend was 2012, and guess who they played? They played the Carolina Panthers, and D'Angelo Williams and company came in here and won the game. And D'Angelo Williams, after the game, said, I saw on the program it said homecoming game. And he said, I just couldn't believe in the NFL they had a homecoming game. They thought they were going to treat us like we were a homecoming opponent. And he just said, I was pissed. And the Panthers won the game. They stopped calling it homecoming. And they now, for many years, have referred to it as Alumni Weekend. Not a great move by Bruce that particular year to dub the game a homecoming game. But Darryl Green will be front and center of Alumni Weekend. They're expecting over 150 former players back for this game. That's a lot, considering what they've been unable to draw back at times over the years. Different day, that is for sure. I'll play for you throughout the morning some of the signature plays of Darryl Green's career, kind of coming back into segments, because Darryl Green had several signature moments. You just heard number one. I don't think anybody would debate that that's number one. I think you could argue that it's the second most famous or most memorable play in franchise history. Of course, Riggo's 4th-and-1 in Super Bowl 17 is number one. That's a clear number one, no debate. Number two, I think I'd probably go Dexter, Darryl Grant, NFC Championship game, Dexter tipping Gary Hogaboom's pass, Darryl Grant picking it off and returning it for the clinching touchdown, which sent Washington to Super Bowl 17. But I think number three for me would be Darryl Green's punt return at Soldier Field in Chicago. That was a wow play. Man, those teams under Joe Gibbs, they won a ton of road playoff games as underdogs. Again, some of Darryl's other signature plays we will come back into segments with throughout the morning. By the way, I was thinking about this and talking to Tommy on my podcast yesterday about it. I actually don't think it's that hard, but the next year, if they're continuing to retire jerseys, and I think that there are three more that have to be retired, and put them in any order you want, but Charlie Taylor's 42, John Riggins 44, and Art Monk's 81 are the three jerseys that have to be retired. After that, everything is debatable, in my opinion. But as somebody who's followed this organization for a long, long time, those are three givens in terms of jerseys and numbers retired. In terms of the order, I think Riggo should be next year. I think, in terms of stature, I think his should go next. And then, you'd go Charlie Taylor, who passed away a few years ago and was one of the greatest receivers in NFL history. Charlie Taylor was the all-time receptions leader when he retired from the game. And then probably Art after that. But I think Riggo should be next. That would be my preference. And that should happen in 2025. But congrats to Darryl Green. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the day. It is certainly deserved. A Mount Rushmore Washington Redskin, Washington franchise football player of all time. Last night, Denton, I mean, the Yankee-Cleveland game, I'm sure you will have it in your news today and maybe include some of the calls of the home runs, especially the two Cleveland home runs. Although Judge and Stanton going back-to-back in the eighth was crazy. But I say this every year, but sometimes you're just it's so gripping, the pitch-by-pitch excitement and tension in a playoff game in October. And last night's game in Cleveland was a memorable all-time playoff game. I know it wasn't a Game 7 or a Game 5 decider in a first round or, you know, a Game 6 in a World Series. It was Game 3. The Yankees were up 2-0. And the Guardians were down, the Guardians being the former Indians, were down to their last out in the bottom of the ninth after in the eighth, Judge had his first home run for a lead, to take the lead in a game, in a postseason game. And then Stanton came up right after him and hit a home run. But the home run in the bottom of the ninth, the two-run shot, by the way, Lane Thomas got on with a two-strike count. And then Noel, Big Christmas, they call him, came up and just unloaded one 404 feet to tie it. I mean, all of this happening when they were down to their final out and about to go down 3-0. And then in the 10th, the defensive play they made in the top of the 10th, and then Fry's homer, the two-run shot to win it, walk-off fashion, 7-5. That kept me, I'll tell you this, I had zero interest in turning to the football game. Zero. I mean, the football game was a snoozer. Anyway, I do want to get to that here momentarily, but that was just incredible drama. And, you know, you get that again tonight. You get Dodgers, who took a 3-1 series lead last night with kind of a no-brainer win, no-sweat win, and then you'll get Cleveland and New York game 4 tonight. But, God, that's good. The football. Did you watch the baseball, Denton? Did you watch that?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of Yankees-Cleveland. My fiance's from Cleveland, so we had a particular interest in that one.
Yeah, that's the game I'm talking about. One of the most dramatic games we've seen in recent history.
Yeah, it was great.
It was great. And then, you know, by the time I got to the football game, by the way, I did, and I gave out, I think, Denver as a lean yesterday. I think I talked about it. I forget if I did or didn't on this or the podcast. But anyway, I did take Denver last night, which was good. I didn't give it out as a smell test pick. Wish I had. But here's just kind of all you need to know about an NFL season and how things change so dramatically and how week to week it is. After the first 2 weeks of the season, New Orleans was 2-0 and it scored 91 points. They beat the Panthers 47-10 and then absolutely embarrassed the Cowboys in Dallas 44-19. And then they had that really tight, intense defensive game that they lost to the Eagles. Then they lost on a walk-off against the Falcons. And now they're banged up and injured, and they've lost. I mean, they've no Derek Carr, and he wasn't, you know, when the competition stepped up defensively, you could see that his play declined a little bit, but still a hell of a lot better than Spencer Rattler. They lost Shaheed. They didn't have Olave last night. They were missing parts of their offensive line. And after those two impressive wins to open up the season where people were saying, wow, that's impressive, New Orleans, you know, they've lost 5 games in a row. And in their last 2 games, they've given up 84 points to the Buccaneers and the Broncos. I mean, they're done. I mean, injuries are really what derailed them, no doubt. But that's a big part of the NFL, staying healthy. Healthy teams tend to win more games than unhealthy teams. And meantime, you know, Denver, they lose 2 games to open up the season where they can barely score, and they've won 4 now out of their last 5. And I don't think that Bo Nix is playing at a super high level, but they're very good on defense, Denton. Very good on defense. They didn't even have Sertan last night. And they can run the football with Javonte Williams, and Nix is part of the running attack. And they're sitting there now at 4-3. I mean, do they have a super impressive win? I guess at the Jets, the at Tampa win, remember, was like, what happened there? Tampa was a big favorite. How did they won 26-7? Well, they're really good defensively. And Sean Payton's doing a really good job. And they play, you know, they've got like the Panthers and the Browns and the Colts and the Raiders again. I mean, they could win 8-9 games. The Broncos could. I think. I mean, I'm not a big believer in Bo Nix to this point, but he adds a lot to their dual threat rush attack. I mean, they ran for 225 yards last night against a Saint defense that's been, at times, pretty good this year. NFL's crazy, man. Denver, 33-10. New Orleans, 2-0, 91 points, 5 straight losses since. Denver loses their first two. They've won 4 out of their last 5.
New Orleans really right validates now, your stance on head fakes in the first 2 weeks.
Oh, no doubt. Major head fakes. But let me just say that typically when you are really good offensively early in the season, it tends to be less varied moving forward. There's less variance in the offense moving forward. Now, New Orleans may have continued to be good on offense had they been healthy. Although Philadelphia really kind of shut them down in week 3. You know, that was a pretty intense game. But they have nothing. They didn't have any of their receivers, any of their linemen. And, oh, by the way, they're starting Spencer Rattler at quarterback. Anyway, you just look at it in the AFC. We were talking yesterday, you know, playoff team, yes or no. We both said absolutely no to Denver. But I think they would actually be in if the season ended today. They would actually be in the playoffs. They would be like the 7 seed or maybe the 6 seed. And we'll see. There's going to be a lot of opportunities. We talked about this yesterday in the AFC for teams like Cincinnati and the Jets. Teams that are 2-4, but because, you know, currently there are teams like the Broncos and the Steelers and the Colts that would be in contention for a playoff spot, 9-8 is going to get at least one team into the AFC playoffs and maybe 2 this year. It's the NFC where you're probably going to have to win 10 to get in. Maybe one team at 9-8 gets in. All right. We'll get to the Tony Bennett stuff. I know that that was shocking to a lot of people yesterday. Tony Bennett retiring immediately, effective immediately, on the eve, really, you know, a week or so away from the season beginning, maybe 2 weeks away from the season beginning. He brought UVA fans that, you know, national championship in 2019. That was one of those programs, you know, that had had moments over a long period of time. Obviously, they had the Ralph Sampson years when they were favored to win a national championship and never got it done. Went to just one Final Four during Ralph's tenure in Charlottesville. And UVA basketball is a big deal, and he brought them their national championship, you know, a year after he became the first 16 seed, the first 1 seed to lose to a 16 seed, UMBC, in 2018. A hell of a basketball coach, Tony Bennett. We'll talk more about him when we get to Denton's news a little bit later on in the show. All right, Washington and Carolina Sunday. Keys to a win over the Panthers. They're 8-point favorites on Sunday. Shouldn't be that tough, right? I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as easy as everybody thinks it will be. We'll get to that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Got to go 96 yards for a touchdown, and probably inside the 35 for a field goal try. Mitchell, oh, it's picked off and taken in. Touchdown, Washington wins. Darryl Green.
That was a pick six against the Detroit Lions. Darryl Green, first Lions possession in overtime, and he picked off a pass, jumped up on his feet, returned it for a touchdown. That was one of Darryl Green's memorable plays for sure. Norv Turner jumping all over him in the end zone after that pick. It was an exciting play. Darryl Green at that point in his career had a couple of pick sixes, including one in the NFC title game and one in another playoff game. Darryl Green's got two pick sixes in playoff games, but that play came in the 95 season when early on in the year they were a decent team. They had beaten Dallas at home. They had lost an overtime game to Philly. They were trying to fight their way back into some relevance after a couple of tough years in 93 and 94. And Darryl Green picked off the Scott Mitchell pass in overtime and returned it just 7 yards for a touchdown for a 36-30 win. All right, Sunday, Carolina. This is one you really need to get. You know, we talked about the opportunity yesterday that they have this year within the division. You know, the division's kind of falling apart around them. I still would not count Philadelphia out. Not yet. They've got a lot of talent, certainly on offense. But you've got the best right now offense in the division, perhaps one of the top two or three offenses in the league. You've got a quarterback that right now is playing at an elite level. In the division, you've got the best quarterback and the best coaching staff. I don't think there's any question about that right now. In the NFC, you may have the best quarterback overall in terms of the way he's playing. The division is within reach. I mean, they're the favorite right now to win the NFC East. But they have a chance to accomplish even more than that, you know, even before the postseason begins, if they are to make the postseason. You know, we talked about yesterday just the opportunity with the NFC North kind of looking like they're going to beat each other up over the final 12 weeks of the season, 11 weeks of the season. You see an NFC South where probably the winner isn't going to win more than 10 games, an NFC West where the 49ers may lead the division on Sunday night with a 3-4 record. They play the Chiefs. That's in place. So how many games are they going to win with the start that they've had? This is one of those games you got to get. You're better than Carolina. You know, it's the NFL. Anything can happen. We understand that. But you're an 8-point favorite. The largest Washington's been favored by over any team since 2017. It's been 7 years since they've been an 8-point favorite or larger. They were a 12-point favorite in October of 2017 against the 49ers. They won by 2, by the way, in that game. They've been 7, 7.5-point favorites. They have not been this large of a favorite in 7 years. And yet, you know, the Panthers, I've said this all week long, they don't stink. They're not the worst team in the league. Their record may reflect that they are one of the worst teams in the league, but since starting Andy Dalton at quarterback for Bryce Young, they've been a different team. You know, they have lost three in a row. They won the first game with Dalton in Vegas against the Raiders, but they've been much more competitive, especially on offense. They're just better on offense than they were with Bryce Young. They've moved the football. They've had long drives. They've been able to run the football. So let me get to the keys to a win over the Panthers, which everybody's assuming will be a win. You shouldn't assume that because Washington's flawed. They don't have a very good defense. That's clear at this point. Maybe it'll improve with the players they have. Maybe it'll improve a lot with additions that they make prior to the trade deadline. But they're not a good defensive football team. 28th ranked per DVOA. And they're really, really struggling against the run. I think number one is that Washington has to prevent Carolina from going on long drives and keeping and possessing the football. They're capable of doing it. Listen to some of these drives since Andy Dalton took over. So last week, they opened the game with a 12-play, 67-yard drive that took 6 minutes and 33 seconds. Against Cincinnati 3 weeks ago, they had an 11-play, 70-yard drive that took 5 minutes and 34 seconds. They had an 11-play, 70-yard drive that took 6 minutes and 5 seconds. Against the Raiders in Dalton's first start, they had a 9-play, 70-yard drive that took close to 5 minutes. They had a 10-play, 75-yard drive that took 5 minutes and 56 seconds. And they had an 11-play, 84-yard drive that took 4 minutes and 52 seconds. Their issue really has been, more than anything else, mistakes, penalties, turnovers that have derailed drives. You know, last week against Atlanta, a team that isn't very good defensively, kind of like Washington, they opened up with a 12-play, 67-yard drive, 6 minutes and 33 seconds. They were only down 5 at halftime, 22-17, but they had 10 penalties in the game for 74 yards, and they had 2 interceptions in the second half. And that's why they lost by 18. If they don't get penalized as much as they did, if they don't turn the ball over twice, both of them not great throws by Andy Dalton, bad decisions, bad throws, he's capable of doing that. He's also capable of the opposite. They're right there with the Falcons. Why? Because Chuba Hubbard, their running back, 18 carries, 92 yards, 5.1 yards per carry. Number one on the list is you've got to prevent Carolina from long, successful offensive drives. And because if they are able to generate 2 or 3 of those, it shortens the game. It keeps our best player, the quarterback, off the field. We've talked about for so many years, right, you know, playing certain teams, and it's like you just got to keep, you know, that offense and that quarterback off the field. So your best, you know, defense is your offense. You got to stay on the field somehow. Other teams now are saying that when they play Washington, our best defense will be our offense. We got to stay on the field. We got to possess the ball. We got to move the sticks. We got to have long possessions. We've got to score at the end of these possessions, but we got to shorten the game and keep Jaden Daniels and the Washington offense off the field. That's like, if you're, you know, thinking about keys to beating Washington right now, that's the number one key. Don't let that offense on the field and have a bunch of swings at it, because they're the number one points per drive team in the NFL. They don't punt, really. It just, for whatever reason, they don't punt. They score a lot. Number one, Washington beats Carolina if they prevent the Panthers from long, time-consuming drives that would shorten the game and give them a chance. They're capable of doing it. So number two on the list of why Washington or how Washington will beat Carolina. To prevent those long drives, you've got to stop the run. You've got to commit to stopping Chuba Hubbard. He's the third leading rusher in the NFL. He's tops in yards per carry. He, you know, we saw the, we had Charch on the show yesterday. Charch had given you a bunch of numbers on the show on Hubbard. He's a very underrated back in the league right now. He's number two in yards per carry among starting running backs, averaging 5.6 yards per carry. He's third in yards after contact in the league. He's fourth in rushes of 15 yards or more, and he's number one in rushing yards over expectation. Chuba Hubbard can run the football. They've blocked for him very well. Their receivers block. Their tight ends block. He's got exceptional vision. He's got really good yards after contact ability. You have to be able to stop the run. They haven't been able to do that with the exception of against Cleveland, a terrible offensive team. This is not Cleveland coming in here offensively. They also, by the way, have Miles Sanders as a backup, if you were curious. Andy Dalton is a game-managing, a little bit better than a game-managing quarterback, but if they get a running game going, he can really hurt you. Play action, boots. They've got Deontay Johnson. They've got the rookie Xavier Leggett, big target. They'll throw to Miles Sanders. They'll throw to Hubbard out of the backfield as well. This is a team capable of moving the football against a bad defensive team. Washington's a bad defensive team right now. Atlanta is not a good defensive team, and Carolina rolled up a lot of yards and points. The problem was they turned it over. They were 50% on third down against Atlanta. They just had too many penalties, turnovers. That leads me to number three. Washington beats Carolina if Carolina self-destructs a little bit on offense. You know, I'm not asking for Washington or telling you that Washington needs to win the turnover battle by plus two or plus three to beat the Panthers. I'm not saying that. But to get that offense off the field and keep it from dominating time of possession and keeping the ball away from Washington's offense, if you're not stopping the run, you need Carolina to help out a little bit, which is what they've done. They did it last week, as I mentioned, against Atlanta. They did it the week before against the Bears in a game that was not a competitive game after the first quarter. Carolina took the opening drive, went down the field, and scored a touchdown to take a 7-0 lead. But in that game, they ended up with three turnovers. They lost the turnover battle 3-0. That derailed a lot of what they hoped to have done against a good defensive team in Chicago. All right, number four, Washington beats Carolina if they just keep doing what they've been doing offensively. But really, the opportunity this week, I think, comes on the ground. I think you can really run it at Carolina. Washington last week decided, I think before the game even began, we can't run it against Baltimore's front. We're going to throw the football. That's how we move the football against them. And I'm still a believer that even if Brian Robinson Jr. had been healthy and been available, that they wouldn't have tried to run it as much or that much more, but even if they had tried to run it that much more, I don't know that they would have been successful, and I think ultimately they would have thrown the football a lot. I actually am curious to know whether or not that was why Brian Robinson Jr. was held out. He was injured. He was banged up. I wonder if they had had a different opponent with a different game plan if he had played. He's obviously practiced, you know, all this week. He'll be ready for Carolina. You can run the football against the Carolina Panthers. Tyler Algier last week, 18 carries, 105 yards, 5.8 yards per carry. Bijan Robinson, these are two excellent backs. I'll concede that. But still, Washington's got some good backs as well. Bijan Robinson, 15 carries, 95 yards, 6.3 yards per carry. The week before that, you had the Bears rushed for over 100 yards. Now, Caleb Williams threw for 300-plus in that game. Cincinnati, the week before that, Chase Brown, 15 carries, 80 yards, 5.3 yards per carry. They rushed for 4.5 yards per carry as a team and rushed for nearly 150 yards. You can run the ball against Carolina. By the way, you can see that the quarterback should have an opportunity to run the football against Carolina's front as well. A dual threat attack against Carolina's front should be successful. Carolina does play more of a base 3-4 with Evero as their defensive coordinator. Remember, this is a guy that has gotten head coaching looks the last couple of years, but they are struggling defensively right now, and I think this is a big day for Brian Robinson Jr., a big day for Austin Ekeler, and perhaps even a big day for the quarterback. Although typically 3-4 bases, you don't get a lot of zone read activity out of that. You keep it in the running back's gut and run the ball, you know, inside the tackles against a base 3-4. But Washington can certainly run the football. And then, look, you take your shots. They've got some corners. J.C. Horn can cover. You know, they've got some players in that back end, but you should be able to take some shots as well. Don't be surprised if you see a lot of cover two, if you see a lot of go ahead and throw the ball in the middle of the field, you know, in that, you know, 10 to 15 yard, maybe 20 yard range. You may not get a lot of shots against Carolina, but you should be able to get a lot of sort of cover two shots against Carolina. But first and foremost, I think they can run the football and dominate when they have the ball. I don't see Carolina slowing Washington's offense down. This should be another, you know, if it's eight possessions, they score on five or six of them. I mean, I don't see Tressway being, you know, busy against the Panthers. The key to this game really is, can Carolina offensively do what they've done occasionally since Andy Dalton took over, and that is move the football and possess the football and keep the other team's offense off the field without self-destructing with penalties and turnovers? That's the game for me. If Carolina self-destructs, it's a rout. If Carolina doesn't self-destruct, and Washington, as they've had struggles defensively, can't get Carolina off the field consistently enough, then you've got a shootout. You've got a game that'll be competitive. And Carolina will certainly have a chance to cover and score, you know, 24-plus. Washington's a bad defensive team right now. I mean, I don't think you can sugarcoat it enough. Or it'd be the opposite of that. There's no way to sugarcoat it. You know, they are not good defensively. They've played one good defensive game. That was against Cleveland. The Arizona game, I think, was misleading. I think what we saw last week is more of what they are right now. And so, you got a chance to win every week with your offense against anybody. You also have a chance against poor opponents to be in games that are tighter than you really want them to be. Keep Carolina from long possessions. Stop the run, sell out to stop the run, and then you should be offensively able to run the football as well. And just hope that Carolina isn't able to shorten the game and you end up with like a, you know, a Carolina possession at the end in a 27-20 game with them having a chance to go down and tie the game or win it with a 2-point conversion. I feel like that's what's coming on Sunday, something similar to that, because I'm not confident that they can stop Carolina or Chuba Hubbard or Andy Dalton and some of the receivers if they load the box. I think Dalton's capable still at whatever age he is. What is he, 37, 36, something like that. All right, we'll get to some Denton news next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Draw play, Dorsett, and look out.
Uh-oh,
this could be bye-bye. He has great speed down the sideline. Tony Dorsett.
And look who caught him.
And Tony Dorsett goes down. Only one man on the field could catch him. Darryl Green, the world-class sprinter from Texas A&I.
He did make up some ground, too, Frank.
That was the night Darryl Green was introduced to the Washington fan base and the rest of the NFL. The season opener, 1983 Monday Night Football, Skins and Cowboys at RFK Stadium. And nobody back then could catch Tony Dorsett, but Darryl Green ran him down in what was a thrilling but a memorable loss. Washington blew a 20-point lead and lost to the Cowboys that night, 31-30. We're playing some of Darryl Green's signature moments. His number 28 retired Sunday during the Washington-Carolina game. I was wrong. Ben's going to join us earlier, I guess, on Fridays because of the Quinn get-together with the media. So we're going to get Ben on right now so he doesn't get scolded, lectured by the head coach for doing live radio hits during his press conference. So, what do you think, Sunday?
Kevin, always a pleasure, even if you forgot about me.
I did forget about you.
Sunday, what's interesting is, again, I think we're all recalibrating our mind as to what's happening here, right, with this whole situation. And, you know, we've all been surprised, obviously, with this 4-2 record. It was 4-1. The thing about it is, and look, they've lost to the two teams that are the two on the record, on their schedule so far, that are like looking like playoff teams, Tampa and Baltimore, and the other ones are not that way. But they've also just taken care of business. And, they, you know, the Cleveland game being the prime example, the Browns are a mess, and Washington allowed them to continue to be a mess by not, you know. And I think that, to me, is incredibly laudable and probably needs to get more attention. I before the season started, you know, my entire outlook for them was, is Jaden Daniels look like the guy, and are they competitive week in and week out? If they do those things, to me, this will be a winning season, let alone the, whatever the record is. So my point is, based on what we have seen, I think they're going to go out and handle business against the Panthers. Obviously, Carolina is not that good. Andy Dalton's a, you know, fine, competent quarterback, but he's not a game changer. They're giving up, as bad as Washington's run defense has been, Carolina's has been worse. They're allowing the most points in the league. They don't have a ton of game breakers on offense, though. Deontay Johnson, a receiver, and Chuba Hubbard, a running back, are pretty good. Their offensive line inside is not bad. But this is a game, based on what we've seen from Washington, that they should, you know, win, and because they're playing pretty, aggressive, competent. There's a lot of enthusiasm. So, you know, I think the game itself is not particularly exciting, you know, especially sandwiched in between a Lamar Jackson game and a Caleb Williams game. But, you know, if they keep this going, I think this will be a good sign for where they're at. Coming off a win, they were able to just take care of business in, you know, pretty matter-of-fact fashion.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we said it kind of before the Cleveland game, and we haven't said it much around here at all over the last many, many years, but this is a game they should win. You know, there aren't many in the NFL with teams that aren't either elite or good enough, but this is a game they should win. I think that's always concerning, especially when you are flawed, because Washington is flawed defensively, Ben. They are not a good defensive football team, and teams can get healthy on them and their defense. So I'm just curious as to where you are on that right now, and I know that we'll have more time to talk about this in the coming weeks, but it's been a conversation, you know, on this show the last couple of days. What can they do to become a better defense to take advantage of what has been an elite offense in quarterback play?
Well, I mean, you know, like Joe Witt Jr., who I've enjoyed listening to so far this season, you know, he puts the onus on himself, you know, I've got to do a better job of getting the message through to players. But he's also been specific in certain ways. Like yesterday he talked about how the Baltimore game, from his perspective, came down to four plays in which there was communication issues. And he
broke
it down.
What were the four plays? Do you know? I heard him say that. What were the four plays? Does anybody know?
No, I mean, he didn't say. And, you know, I mean, you obviously can look at some of the bigger ones they have, you know, whether it was the Lamar Jackson run or the Zay Flowers screen or things like that. But in the secondary, you know, he said, look, communication, you know, is about sending the message, receiving the message, and essentially acknowledging the message, comprehending it. And he talked about how in a couple instances the message was sent appropriately and somebody just didn't, you know, process what it was that they were to do. In other cases, the wrong message was sent and so on. And communication sounds like something that should be easily fixable, right? Just repetition and just an understanding. But, you know, when we say that a team needs more talent, sometimes the talent isn't just about running a 4-4-40 or making a break on an out pass. Sometimes it is just the mental side as well. And I don't really know what they can do in the secondary, to be really honest. I just think their talent level isn't good enough. And unless guys like, you know, unless certain players just have significant breakthroughs during the season, which is not impossible, we do see that, it's hard to see where this goes. Now, that's not even factoring in. They just lost Jonathan Allen. And, you know, that's, at a minimum, it's taking away a viable starter, let alone the maximum aspect of a guy who's been to a Pro Bowl a couple times, taking him off the field. We'll see if Dorrance Armstrong's available this week or not. He doesn't practice yet, and I know that rib injury was definitely painful for him. So we'll see about that. But ultimately, like, you know, even if Armstrong is out there and so on, I really don't know what much they can do, particularly on the back end. You know, again, the back end's not necessarily about the run game, which has been a huge issue, but I honestly, to me, the secondary is the real concern, and I think this is where they may ultimately land a tier or so below the main contenders in the conference, because, like I said, I don't really see how they're fixing this unless Emmanuel Forbes plays and has a big turnaround, you know, that commensurate to being picked in the first round a year ago.
Well, do you think they'll do anything about it trade-wise before the deadline?
I doubt it. I mean, like, look, if we're talking about a trade in which it's going to be somebody so significant that the world's all be like, wow, I can't believe they got that guy, but that guy's going to cost you a day two pick, I doubt it. If we're just talking about taking a total flyer on somebody's veteran that maybe, you know, just be a better version of what they have now, that you know, you trade a sixth-round pick for that player in a seventh or something, sure, I think that something like that on the margin, I think anybody, any team could make that. But I'd be surprised to see them make something that would all catch our attention, like, wow, I can't believe they just got that guy. I don't feel that happening.
Why?
For the same reason we've talked about all along. I just don't at the moment think they're deviating from their plan of the long-term thinking that Adam Peters is not going to trade away these picks for likely a short-term fix. You know, I mean, look, they've got Carolina this week. They've got the Bears next week. And then they have the Giants. Those are three winnable games. If they win them all and they're 7-2, well, then maybe they have to have a different conversation in the room simply just based on the opportunity being presented. But I still don't know if that's, you know, where, if the organization does anything. Again, the two teams that they have played this year that we would say right now are like playoff teams, Tampa and Baltimore, you know, Tampa kind of beat them up pretty good in the opener. And then last week, they were competitive against Baltimore for sure, but it also felt like the Ravens could just call their number as needed on when they had the ball. And I don't see it happening right now. But, you know, go 3-0 in the next three games and maybe you have to change your mind.
Yeah, I think that's fair in terms of the timing of a decision. But I also think what, you know, a move that could be made doesn't have to be a short-term move. You know, there are other options in addition
to
short-term
moves. If you can get the Montez Sweat, equivalent, like a 24, 25-year-old in the prime of their career that you in the following offseason would be willing to sign to a four-year, you know, $100 million deal, sure, those guys don't become available. But the reason he was available last year was because of the weird circumstance here of the ownership sale. They had already paid Allen and Payne. It was hard to see how you're paying the third guy. That's the thing. We could, sure, anything is possible if the circumstances are there, but the odds of the circumstances being like that are pretty slim. Those guys don't get traded, typically, let alone at the deadline.
Who's out this weekend? Who do we have to be concerned about Sunday?
Well, I think Armstrong's the one to watch. Again, he hasn't practiced this week. I don't think the rib injury is like, you know, any long-term issue, but he was, you know, definitely in some like in some legit pain. And we'll just have to see. He was with the team stretching yesterday, which arguably is a positive sign. But then he went to the side field when practice started, and they listed him as did not practice. So if he doesn't go today, you know, it seems unlikely he plays on Sunday based on general how these things work. But if he's not able to go, you know, not only has he been, you know, one of their better pass rushers, but, you know, you take him off the field with John Allen the same week. Javonte Jean-Baptiste had been, you know, high up in the rotation. Now he's also on IR, so that would be a big blow. They don't have a ton of depth on the defensive end. You'd have Cleveland Farrell and Dante Fowler presumably getting most of the reps. And then you're looking at, what, F.A. Obata, who was back last week off IR, and I guess the never-ending discussion of whether Jamin Davis is going to have a role or not. So the depth thins out pretty quick if he's not able to go.
Ben Standig joining us at Ben Standig on X on Twitter. Read him on The Athletic. He's got a podcast, Last Man Standig. Emmanuel Forbes, you've already mentioned him. What do you see as his role Sunday?
I mean, based on what we've seen and what they have said, I see no role for him on Sunday. I'd be pleasantly surprised. You know, the other day, I think it was talked on Monday, but we had Dan Quinn, and I asked him first, he's been playing Mikey Sanders on the outside. Is the plan, though, for him to still be a long-term slot corner? And he said, yeah. Okay. So one way to sort of doable at now is bring Forbes in, let him play on the outside, and put Sandristil inside. I mean, unless you're telling me that the Sandristil with Noah Igbinoghi combo is just that much better than whatever Forbes could or couldn't do, then it seems like I would try that, but they're not at the moment looking to do it. They said last week he was inactive because they wanted to have an extra defensive lineman up to battle the Ravens running game. And, okay, maybe I get that to an extent, but it doesn't apply that, like, you could still start him. He can't play special teams. That's kind of the rub, or he's not going to be much of a help there. So, but if you start him, you don't have the special teams is a lesser of an issue. You can, make another player inactive, whether Michael Davis or somebody. So, you know, he may be active this week, but they're going to have to do a 180 on how they're viewing him right now, it appears, for me to think he's going to play.
And Brian Robinson Jr. is a go, right, Sunday?
Barring a setback, he looks like he's going to play, yes.
All right. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. Talk to you later.
Yeah, man. See ya.
Ben Standig, everybody. We will do some Denton news. There was a lot to cover from yesterday. We'll do that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.